This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Mizzou Sports Podcast. This is Daniel Jones. I'm with the Columbia Daily Tribune, and with me is Cameron Teague Robinson. And we are here in Mizzou Arena after a crushing, I would say, 77-75 Florida victory here at Mizzou Arena. I don't know. I figured we could start off this podcast kind of quickly rehashing some of the personal crushing blows in our own arsenals.
Right.
That one was one of the most unique I've ever seen at Mizzou Arena. I don't know if I've ever seen a basketball game end in that fashion. But when you think of losses that really tore your heart out, which ones come to mind for yourself?
For me, the biggest one, and it's really not even a contest, is Game 3 of the NBA Finals last year when the Cavs lost to the Warriors because Durant pulled up in LeBron's face and hit that three. I'll never forget that, obviously. And that was just – you were with me on that game. It was heartbreaking.
You were pretty distraught.
I was crushed because I thought if the Cavs won that game, it would have been a series. But that was the biggest heartbreak for me. It was nothing like this. I've never seen anything like this game today.
Yeah, this one was kind of singularly – it was crushing because of its impact. I mean, that was an important game.
Right.
But because of the – I mean, it was literally snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like Mizzou had the ball, had the last shot, and I mean, I wrote about Chris – Chiesa in my game story, I guess my sidebar, and it really Mizzou didn't even know it was dead until he was like halfway down the floor going the other way. As a fan, the game 7 of the World Series when the Royals lost to the Giants, that one sucked a lot. That was an amazing run and came to a pretty swift end with Madison Bumgarner kind of like just strangling the life out of you. I was trying to think as an athlete in my short athletic career, of games that were crushing.
Easy for me. I was playing our rival Padua in soccer my senior year. We had never beat them. They came into our stadium and we have like a victory bell, and they rang our victory bell as they walked in. So we were already pissed off. We were up 1-0 the whole game, probably my best game and goal ever. It was 4 minutes left. They had like a crazy two really good forwards, and we had kept them out, and they got a stupid header off like the post. And we didn't even lose. We tied, but I was crying in the huddle. I was so pissed off that they tied it because I wanted to beat them so bad. That was without a doubt. Like I can't imagine what those guys are going through.
Right. That's on a national scale. I think the worst for me was I played soccer like you, and in high school we lost to our rivals in a game that went into double overtime and then penalty kicks. And it went through the first five, and then it was like you had like the sixth and seventh and eighth guys up shooting penalty kicks, and the other team, our main rival high school, they made theirs, and then our guy hit his penalty kick hit the crossbar. Remember the enduring image was the ball shooting up into the sky and the other team celebrating by sprinting out on the field.
It's same thing for them today.
It was pretty much the exact same.
Water runs out in the field and you just see like Jordan Geist and Jordan Barnett walking by, head down.
Right.
It's tough.
So what do you make of that loss when you finally processed what happened? What was kind of your first thought?
Like the play, the steal? Wow. I literally couldn't believe it when it happened. I was like, it was a very lazy pass, to be fair. Jordan Geist, who played pretty well. Like, Jordan Geist is going to get killed for that turnover on Twitter, all social media. But he played pretty well. It was a lazy pass. I really didn't understand the play call, the play design out of a timeout. You got to give all credit to Chris Chiesa. That was a tremendous play and he read it from the start. Like, we were watching the play over and over and over again. And you could, from the moment they inbounded the ball, his eyes were on Jordan Geist. And he was guarding Jordan Barnett, who was the hottest player on the floor.
Right.
And his eyes were only on Jordan Geist. And the second Jordan Geist dribbled through his legs, Chiesa jumped, just sprinted towards the pass and jumped it.
A couple points on that play, because I've probably watched the replay 50 times up in the press area right after the game. First of all, Jordan Barnett was not a part of the play.
Makes
was
no
not
sense.
Even on the side of the floor that they were trying right that they were running all the action.
Right.
I don't know if that was part of a design to keep Chuiza away from the ball, or if if he was, or you know, which obviously would have been unsuccessful.
Yeah.
But I thought it was odd that he wasn't, you know, a part of whatever was happening.
Right.
Wasn't a part of the play. Second was the Jordan Geist had the ball, and I mean, Cassius Robertson was open.
Yes.
Jonte Porter ran down. He ran from the elbow, faked like he was going to set a screen, and ran down into the post.
Corner.
And he drew
yep
two defenders. He drew Cassius Robertson's defender.
Yep.
And Jordan Geist saw Cassius Robertson motioning to get open, and Chris Chuiza saw it at the same time.
Yep.
Jordan Geist and Chris Chuiza saw Cassius Robertson open at the same time. Jordan Geist was dribbling through his legs when Cassius Robertson made his motion to get open, and by the time the ball got to Jordan Geist's left hand to where he could make the pass,
right,
Chris Chuiza was already
right
three steps over
yep
and in position.
He was pretty much in Cassius Robertson's face before Jordan Geist even got the ball off.
Like, yeah, so that dribble between the legs
took too
and totally inadvertent
yeah
might have been the difference in
right
a game-winning shot and the game-losing turnover.
And here's my thing. I tweeted it before the play. Before they even came out of the timeout, I was like, Jordan Barnett has to touch the ball, right? Like, I tweeted he has to take the shot. Even if he doesn't take the shot, he's got to touch the ball. He has to be somewhere where he's not just on the wing. He almost looked like he was just standing in the corner. It wasn't even
yeah
a decoy on the play.
Right, exactly. Not a part of the play at all.
Right. So that was confusing to me.
The other thing I think that in hindsight, maybe, I don't know, I feel like in hindsight, Konzo Martin will probably feel like he... I think it was a bad idea to have the play that set everything up be a pass at the top of the key
right
where a turnover can lose you the game.
Yep.
A pass into the post or a pass into the corner towards the basket, that will not lose you
right
the game.
You can still defend that.
Exactly.
Right.
Like throwing a swing pass in a football game, like
right
if a linebacker intercepts that.
Right,
that's a dangerous pass, and
yep
that's the pass that you hinge the game on.
Right, right.
I think in retrospect and in hindsight, that will be something that might kind
right
of upset Konzo Martin.
Right.
And maybe in the future we'll see a different play design.
Yeah.
But, I mean, really, yeah, Cassius Robertson was open. The ball
right
didn't get to him fast enough, and the difference was a turnover going the other way.
Right, right.
There was a lot that happened before that.
Yeah.
That was the last 4 seconds
ton
of the game. What, I mean, there was officiating. I think that became kind of a big story.
Right.
You had Jordan Barnett absolutely tearing it up.
Yep.
You had Jonte Porter finding him and a bunch of other people. He was probably Missouri's best playmaker.
Yeah, he had
and
six assists. I think second in assists was Jordan. Is tied between Jordan Geist and like Terrence Phillips, all who had one or something like that.
Yeah,
like three others who had one assist.
Right,
your power forward led you in assists with six. You had
right
five more than your point guard.
And then you also had the first game without Blake Harris. Just what aside from that last play, what about this game stood out to you?
Really for me, I really came into this game wanting to see what the rotations were going to look like. Obviously, the first backcourt grouping we saw without Geist and Robertson and Cassius Robertson on the floor was Terrence Phillips and Cullen Van Leer. They seemed to play good minutes in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't play almost any in the second half.
Yeah.
I mean, Kendall started the second half with Jonte Porter, Kevin Perrier, Barnett, Cassius, and Jordan Geist, mainly because Tillman was on the bench with fouls
yeah
literally all game long. But then he seemed to just stick with those five.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tillman fouled out, so he couldn't play. So that would have been your sixth guy, but he just didn't seem – I don't think he's – it still doesn't seem like they trust Terrence Phillips that much.
No, not in the second half. Terrence Phillips played a little bit, and they yanked him out after he made that foul.
Right.
At the other – you know, in the backcourt.
Backcourt, right.
Away from the play. Like,
and it was an off-ball foul. Well, the foul wasn't – I think the foul was on when he fouled the screener, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
Or it looked like he was getting screened, and maybe he fouled the guy with the ball.
I think that was his last moment on the floor.
Yeah.
And that was probably with 12 minutes to go
right
in the game.
And then everybody else played the rest of the game. I mean, you're talking about Jordan Barnett and Cassius Robertson played all 20 minutes of the second half.
Yeah. You mentioned Jonte Porter. That was what I was going to write about, actually, was Jonte Porter's assists before the end of the game happened.
Right.
Just his playmaking ability, his ability to find – people that are open and can take shots is uncanny for somebody his size. I don't know if there's anybody that can pass the way he can pass that's 6'11 in college basketball.
And his height helps his vision because he can see everything.
Yeah.
And he's just a tremendous passer. It really is fun to watch, to see him just be able to find anybody on any side of the court whenever he wants to.
I don't know how many it ended up being. I know in the beginning of the second half, Jordan Barnett had 7 made baskets. Mm-hmm. 6 of them were off Jonte Porter.
Well, Jonte Porter had 6 assists.
So I think Jordan Barnett finished with 8 buckets. I think he was like 8 of 11 or 8 of 13.
13, 8 of 13.
So 6 of those came off passes from Jonte Porter.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it was just like that connection was so potent and it worked so well all day.
I believe Jonte also had like 7 rebounds. I want to say he had somewhere around 8 or 9 points. I mean, you're talking about a guy who in a few years could be a walking triple-double. Division One basketball. Mm-hmm. He's very, very good, even right now.
Okay, we do have a comment from Alex Schiffer. What did he say?
Alex Schiffer. Many of you may know him as the Missouri sports reporter for the Kansas City Star, or many of you may know him as a guy who tweeted today saying...
It wasn't the official's fault.
He asked, when am I able to come out of hiding? I don't know, Schiff. Might be a couple days.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It might be a couple days. You might have to chill out through the weekend.
I don't know if you saw it, Schiff, but somebody did tell you to stay in New Jersey.
I want you to come back, Schiff.
Maybe we need to put you in the witness protection program.
Right.
What did you think of the officiating? It was a major, I think, plot point today.
It was tough. I thought Jeremiah Tillman got hit with 2 pretty tough ones. The one where he almost like tried to flop for a block. Was that his 5th foul?
I think it was his fourth foul.
That one, I didn't think it was a foul, but the reason it was called a foul was because his body jerked.
Yeah.
It almost looked like he was trying to flop it.
There was a lot of contact there, but there wasn't.
Right. And it looked like he was trying to sell it, but didn't go at it. If you're going to sell it, you got to go.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the referee saw. I don't think it was a foul on Jeremiah. There's nothing else he can do in that position, but I think his body jerking like that is what the ref was like, okay, that's a foul. And it's a foul on Jeremiah because he's the defender in that position. But again, you can't get the first 3 fouls.
Yeah.
No matter how bad those 2 fouls are, you can't get the first 3.
Yeah, Konzo Martin had some interesting words to say after the game in his post-game press conference. Basically said he was hoping that Jeremiah Tillman didn't get a reputation, and by that I think what he was getting at was he didn't want Jeremiah Tillman to get a reputation as a guy who fouls a lot.
Yeah, and specifically by the referees.
Right, and I think so that the reason that that came up is because when you have those kind of bang-bang plays and you're not really sure how much contact there was, you see Jeremiah Tillman, probably a foul.
Right.
And I think Konzo Martin was trying to kind of head that off. There was another one, an attempted block, where he didn't even touch the guy.
Right, yeah.
And that ended up being a foul.
I think Jonte had one of those as well. Cassius Robertson's one was the biggest one because that changed the entire game.
3-pointer at the end.
I don't think he touched Jalen Hudson.
I don't think he did either.
But you call that foul. I think it's maybe you're just anticipating maybe he's going to touch him. And I think on that play, that's a 3-pointer to change the game. Of all plays to anticipate a foul, that's the worst one. Not just because it's like a game changer, but because who anticipates fouls on 3-point shots?
Yeah.
Nobody does that.
I think if you watch the replay, the official was motioning for a foul before
he touched.
Contact was even made.
Right, which I didn't really think.
Or would have been.
Right. So, I mean, Jalen Hudson goes down and makes two of his 3 free throws. And, I mean, everybody knows the rest.
Yeah.
Turnover, game over. But that was a tough one. I thought the referees lost. I mean, you can argue fouls here and there, but I thought all in all, they lost control of the game in the final 8 minutes. I don't understand how Igor doesn't get a flagrant for pretty much almost pulling Jordan Geist's arm out of socket. And Jordan Geist looked like he was ready to go to town when he jumped up.
That's the Jordan Geist that we all know and love. Is the one getting up from
feisty Geisty.
Potential injustice or potential slight he perceived.
It was just tough. I don't know. I thought they just lost control of the game towards the end. And you can't do that when it's a game of this magnitude.
The Konzo Martin said it might have been one of the toughest he's ever encountered, and referring to the officiating. He didn't say that. He just said it was tough, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
and he said it was one of the toughest that he'd ever been a part of as
a coach.
It's
kind of crazy to think of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so you also had some – I don't know. The point guard issue was big coming into today.
Right.
We talked a little bit about how Terrence Phillips didn't play in the second half, but – Where does Mizzou go from here? Now that you've seen a game without Blake Harris and what Missouri has to offer, where do you go?
I don't know, man. I really don't. Like, I mean, I don't think my opinion of them playing Terrence Phillips hasn't changed. I think he still has a lot to prove for this team. He just I mean, you talk about fouls that took him out of the second half, some poor turnovers. I mean, I think there's a reason Konzo stuck with the five guys he played in the second half and didn't go to anybody else.
Yeah.
Those are the guys he trusts, and those are the guys he knows who can kind of make things happen down the stretch. Until that changes, I think they're gonna have to find somebody that they can trust and carrying the ball. Now, is that guy Cassius? Do you have him with the ball in his hands? I don't think he's more of a – he's a better guy coming off ball screen.
Yeah.
See, he gets open
his
so
game,
much on ball screen.
He shoots so much better
right.
when he's catching and shooting.
Right. So I don't know what to do. I mean, Jordan Jackson needs help at point guard.
Yeah.
It's just where do you find it right now? And I don't know if that person's on the roster unless you make it Cassius.
Yeah, I think it has to be. If it's not going to be Terrence Phillips, then it has to be Cassius. Yeah. Those are your only two options.
Right, unless you're going to play Rao. By Rao.
So it's a tough answer to a tough question.
Yeah.
Jordan Geist played pretty well today, as we said. But if there's
two plus
an
minus.
Injury, if there's foul trouble, anything like that, then you're going.
You're tough. I mean, because you don't even have any other guards.
I mean,
even if Jordan Geist gets in foul trouble, your guards are Cassius and Terrence Phillips and Cullen Van Leer.
Who didn't play hardly at all in the second half.
Hit a three in the first half. They're in a tough spot guard-wise, especially with Blake leaving. And then it's not to say that Blake was an All-American, per se.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the depth that he provided. Like, it was just another body you could throw out there in waves.
Yep.
So it's a tough spot right now.
Jordan Burnett finished with 28 points.
He's on fire lately.
Yeah.
He can't miss.
He is. He's been really good.
Yeah.
He shot 6 of 9 from 3,
yeah.
I think, was his final stat.
Yeah. He had a 3 from like 4 or 5 feet, like beyond the 3-point line.
That was at the end of the shot clock.
With a hand in his face.
Yeah. End of the shot clock. They gave it to him. He was facing. He was like looking at the half court line and turned around and put up a 28 or 29 foot 3-pointer that went in at the shot clock.
Yeah.
That's when he knew it was just going to be a good night.
Yeah.
What has he done differently in your purview to start putting up these kinds of numbers in the conference play?
I think he's just shooting the ball very confidently. I mean, you see him, like, he gets the ball and he's ready to go. He's ready to shoot the ball each time he gets it. And not to say that he's forcing shots, which I don't think he is. But he's just shooting the ball very confident. When he puts it up, he believes it's going in. Mm-hmm. He's crashing the offensive glass very strong. You saw him get a few points off offensive rebounds today. I think he can still get to the basket a little more because of how athletic he is and how good of a free throw shooter he is. But he is shooting the ball very confidently. And when you're confident shooting the ball and you're on a 10-game streak like he is, it's very hard to slow down.
One thing Konzo said about him, and this is what Kim Anderson would always say last year, is he's so tall. Kim Anderson, I believe, said this a lot about Frankie Hughes, but it applies to Jordan Burnett. He's so tall. He's 6'7". He gets up really high on his jump shot. It's really hard to – I mean, it's almost impossible to block a jump shot of his, but it's really hard even to kind of contest it. You can't get your hand high enough to, like, affect his view. And so that – I mean, when he's hot like that – it's hard to get him out of rhythm because you can't really do much to affect a shot besides prevent him from getting that look in the first place.
Right, and especially where Missouri plays him, he's one of these guys who, I mean, most of the time he's being guarded by people who are smaller than him.
Mm-hmm.
They're not playing him at a four where he's overpowered, where he's oversized. He's in the three spot where you're playing people 6'5", 6'6". Jordan Brown at 6'7", when he's rising up like that, you're not really going to be able to contest that. Even if you are 6'7", you're not really contesting that.
One thing about Jordan Burnett is – on games when he looks really, really good, even in the game, he can go from being really, really good to invisible.
Right.
Happened against Illinois.
Right.
It's happened a lot in his career where he's played really well for like 10 to 20 to 25 minutes and then kind of disappeared, especially in the second half.
Right. He did a little bit in two kind of spurts today. Like the second half of the first half, mm-hmm. he scored 13 in like the first 8 minutes.
Yep. Yep.
And then disappeared and Mizzou struggled.
Yep.
And then the second half, he didn't shoot what he took, didn't take a shot for like the last 10 minutes or something like that.
I think so, yeah. 10 or 11 minutes.
Again, disappeared.
Yeah.
That's something you just want to see. Like, he doesn't have to have 28 points a game.
Right.
But you'd want to see him kind of continue to play the whole 40 minutes.
You need difference makers to continue to make a difference throughout the game, especially at the end when you're trying to either hold a lead or extend it or, you know, make a comeback.
Right. I think he needed help today, and he usually gets it in Cassius. Cassius just didn't shoot well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, like, Jordan Geist didn't score a lot tonight. Jonte played a pretty good game, but didn't score a lot tonight. He did make a couple of really good plays, like that play he made under the basket. I thought that was going to be the play that gave Mizzou the breathing space they needed. He made that, and then that was when Florida got the three free throws at the other end with a minute left. But that was a heck of a play by Jonte to score. They didn't get it. Mizzou didn't really get anything from Kevin Purrier tonight. And Jeremiah Tillman played 8 minutes.
Yeah, what do you have? 4 points, 2 points, something like that?
I think he, I don't know. I think it was six or eight. Oh, okay. I don't know. But at any rate, I mean, there was just a lot of people that kind of showed up for a little bit and then went away. The Jordan Barnett was kind of the one who was there for you from the beginning to the end, but by the end, he wasn't getting the looks. He wasn't like Mizzou's go-to guy.
Right.
Not in the last possession and not at the end of the second half.
Yeah, I think Cassius is, it seems like Cassius is going to be that guy, their go-to guy when the they're at the game, they need a bucket. It seems like Cassius is going to be that guy. I think he's probably their best playmaker off the dribble now that Blake's gone. So we'll
he
see
did
how
make
that
a couple plays off the dribble.
Yeah.
But that, I don't think that's inside. Really his game.
Right. I agree.
I think he feels like he has to do that because you can't just be you can't be the go-to guy if all you can do is catch and shoot threes.
Right, exactly.
You have to be able to do some things off the dribble too.
Right.
To keep people honest. But I don't think that's his game. I think his game is catching and shooting, and Mizzou's just made him the go-to guy because they know, you know, he's the oldest, and those threes are important late.
Right.
Do you have any other thoughts on this game today? They play Georgia
Wednesday
this week, and then they go to Arkansas
Saturday. I guess really quickly, last, but not least, this is just a tough loss for them because this could have been a resume builder. It doesn't hurt their resume because Florida's going to be very good. I imagine Florida will be back in the top 25 by the NCAA tournament. But this could have been a big game for them to put on their resume. They're still lacking a quality resume builder.
Yeah, I agree.
They're going to get some chances here, but this would have been a really good one to have.
They still have a couple of big opportunities. They have games coming up against Arkansas, Texas A&M, Kentucky. They play home and away at all three of those.
Yep.
Tennessee too will be big.
Do they go to Florida as well this year? No.
No, I don't think so.
I don't.
So there's still winnable games out there that will go a long way in building a resume and going for quality
and
wins.
And then they still have the SEC tournament.
Yeah, they do. And so especially if you can get some of those on the road, those will count even more.
Right. Like an Alabama on the road.
Right.
Who's struggling right now but still has the talented team. There's just games all over the schedule they can get. It's just, it would be nice. You can start your conference schedule with a big one.
I feel like Mizzou has just had a lot of opportunities that have already slipped through their fingers.
Yep.
West Virginia,
Illinois,
now Florida.
Yep.
I mean, they've only lost four games a season, but I mean, they were all games that either could have or should have been wins.
Other than Utah.
Utah was the one that really
they
got away from.
Yeah.
But any one of those would have been a resume builder.
Yeah.
Didn't make any of them count. Now your best win is still against St. John's or maybe at UCF, depending on how they finish out the year or so.
Right.
I don't know. That South Carolina win was good. They played really well.
But I don't think South Carolina's going to be good enough to where you can go into a resume and be like, we beat South Carolina on the road.
Yeah.
And that puts you over somebody else. I just don't think they're going to be that good this year.
Yeah. I'm with you there, too. So they'll play, again, two big ones coming up this week.
Yep.
The Arkansas game at Arkansas has always been challenging. They're a really good team when they're playing in Fayetteville. So we'll have more coverage coming up in advance and after that game. I think are you going to be in Arkansas?
Yep.
We'll both be there at Arkansas for that game next weekend. And a road win would be big for this team.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks for tuning in. We've kind of touched on what was a rough afternoon at Mizzou Arena.
Feels like night.
I guess it feels like night now.
Yeah.
I've got my red on. I'm going to go try to catch the rest of this
go
Chiefs
watch
game.
Chiefs get the dub.
We'll see. It's 14-0 the last time I looked. People who are listening to this after the game is over will probably laugh at my naivete that my team, I feel like my team is winning right now. They know the result. When they eventually go back and listen to it, they're going to be like, wow, he was so innocent. He thought he thought he had a chance.
He thought they were gonna win.
Just like Mizzou. I mean, it's just like he thought everything was gonna go so well, and he had no idea that it was all gonna come crashing down later. So I'm gonna go catch the rest of that game, and then we'll get back to work tomorrow. Women play tomorrow. More basketball coming up this week. Thanks for tuning in. You can read all our work in the pages of the Columbia Tribune and at columbiatribune.com. Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, everything else. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you again next week.
And subscribe to Mizzou Sports Podcast at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.